Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Access Bank PLC 2021 Investor Engagement Forum. All participants will be in listen-only mode. For the participants that dialed in, there will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. For the participants on the webcast, if you would like to ask a question, please type the questions in the webcast question box. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star, then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. I'd now like to turn the conference over to Herbert Wigwe. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Let me start by thanking you all for dialing to our investor presentation. The essence of our presentation is to share with you sufficient information with respect to how our institution has been realigned for growth, particularly given the various corporate actions that have happened over the past 12 months. It will also provide clarity to investors on what is guiding our decision making and give you the complete picture of where the institution is headed. It will also serve to provide an update of our retail growth since the acquisition of Diamond Bank and a clear revelation that no African bank of our scale has embraced digital in the manner that we have. I will start by introducing our executive management team, some of whom you are very familiar with, starting with Mr. Roosevelt Ogbonna, who is our Group Deputy Managing Director. We have Mr. Victor Etuoku, who is our Executive Director of Personal Banking. We have Dr. Greg Jebome, who is Executive Director of Risk Management, Adiza Ambrosa, Executive Director of Commercial Banking, Mr. Adiz Bajomo, who is Executive Director of Information Technology and Operations, and Mrs. Chizoma Okoli, our Executive Director in charge of our Business Banking Division, and our most recent addition, Mr. Sheyi Kumakwai, who is Executive Director of African Subsidiaries, playing a crucial role because of the growth we are seeing within the continent. I will start by speaking to Africa and Nigeria. Nigeria remains our primary market, our home market, a very significant market, one in which we have to continue to entrench ourselves very deeply in. And by definition, Africa, which is basically the continent through which we do business, and then we'll then basically start to look at our business outside of the continent. Now, this is extremely important because as we grow as an institution and attaining global scale, it is important for us to entrench and make sure, just like other institutions that have followed this strategy in the past in more developed markets, and make sure that we're extremely strong at home and our immediate environments. So Nigeria and Africa remain extremely important to us, not just because we're from here, but also because of the scale which is available and the opportunities that we see. And of course, to ensure that there's a proper balance, we will also need to have reasonable presence outside of Africa to ensure that both earnings and capital preservation, given the stronger currencies we have outside of the continent. Looking at Africa, and this is the slide you have in front of you, basically is one that has come out of the IMF and Central Bank. We have a population today of about 1.3 billion, and of course, rising up to 1.4 billion by 2023. Nigeria, one of the most populous, if not the most populous country on the continent. We have current population is about 206 million people. And we expect by 2023 that figure will be 222. For Ghana, rising from 30 million people to 32 million people by 2022. And of course, closing at South Africa, which we see rising to about 62.4 million people by 2023. GDP growth rates, obviously everybody has been tempered by COVID. But we expect that by 2023, overall growth rate within the continent should be about 4.3%. For Nigeria, it's expected to be 3.8%. We do believe that there are a couple of things which government is doing, and should they do well, we should be able to see perhaps higher growth rates than that. Ghana about 7.4%, Kenya 5.8%, South Africa 1.5%. Inflation rates, again, in the continent to be about 6.9%. Percent. Of course, brought down by the average of South Africa and Kenya. For Nigeria, we still expect to see very low double-digit inflation rate, about 11%. That are the projections we see by 2023. And for Ghana, about 6.8%. Exchange rates are expected to be stable. I think we may see a bit more deterioration in the case of Nigeria, just using interest rate parities. For Ghana, obviously, same type of thing. Kenya, same type of deterioration. What you see across the continent is that, again, when benchmarks to global currencies and all of that, you will see gradually some form of devaluation coming from the interest rate parities, which you normally see across the world. The monetary policy rate, as stated there, there is an assumption that oil price will improve from about $50 per barrel to about $66 per barrel. So this is where Access Bank sits in the context of Nigeria and across the continent. This is our global network of scale. We have 42 million customers across the entire continent. Actually, this is within Nigeria. We have, which is basically more than, 80% of African countries in terms of the population. So, which is very significant, if you like. Okay? We have a very strong and growing digital footprint. We have about 3,000 ATMs, about 9.5 million unique mobile applications, 53,000 points of sales equipment, unstructured sales service USSD users, about 9 million customers, 633 branches, and about 46,000 agents. And this figure is growing by the day, and just to show you the sheer scale of our digital footprint. We are present in 10 African countries. We do have a reasonable presence in the UK and, of course, in Dubai, and rep offices in China, and India, and Lebanon. Our financial performance has remained strong. If you look at our 9 months ended September 2020, gross revenues were at about 592 billion naira. It's an interesting figure because it is larger than any other bank in the context of Africa. And we have, of course, our profit before tax at about 116 billion naira. Return on equity, about 20.9%. That figure is beginning to inch up after the absorption, after the acquisition of Diamond. What normally happens when there's an acquisition is that obviously you see some inefficiencies, and before you start to sweat the equity, you sweat the assets which you have. So that figure is now beginning to move up. Capital adequacy ratio of 1.2%, Tier 1 ratio of 15.84%, healthy ratios in the context of the country and the continent in which we're operating. Again, gender is very important to us, very strong gender diversity. It's almost an equal number. Sometimes it is higher than this, 53% male, 47% female, as of the date at which this was done. We continue to have global recognition for our strong financial performance. These are the risk ratings. You will see a little bit of a change. Obviously, your risk rating is capped by your sovereign rating. So Standard & Poor's basically downgraded Nigeria. So again, we're the sovereign ceiling, pretty much. In with respect to Standard & Poor's, Fitch did not downgrade Nigeria. And so we've also seen where we are as far as that is concerned. But, in the main, the numbers, or rather the risk ratings, continue to show strong performance and an institution that is basically poised to basically remain here for a very long time. And perhaps we can get this much stronger as we grow and diversify, not just across the continent, but other parts of the world where you have stronger risk ratings, and that will continue to impact on it to a point where you never know, we may have a stronger risk rating than most of the countries in which we're operating. Again, we've received several accolades, being best bank in Africa for SMEs from Euromoney, down to things which we've done in the agri space, and of course, one that we remain extremely proud of is things that have to do with sustainability, and we continue to win all the awards, right from that provided by the Central Bank of Nigeria, and that by the Karlsruhe Sustainable Finance, where we basically won those awards, 5 or 6 years in a row. We remain extremely proud of what we're doing in that space. Now, this is how we've fed and created value over time. And it just shows the compounded annual growth rate for different indices. For customers, we've grown about 36% year on year from 2009, helped, of course, by the combination which we did again in in 2019, which was the Diamond Bank acquisition. So basically, we've shown stronger growth rates than others. Same thing at the gross revenue end. We've shown strong performance, and I think it's Bank Popular that has basically come close to us. What we've done is we've taken the top 10 banks, as you see in the MSCI index, rather, and of course brought them in here because they would typically be present in markets in which we operate, and that would be a good benchmark for us to look at ourselves. And profit before tax, obviously, yes, the numbers appear to be getting significantly better, but the reason you have that number there is the fact that, again, coming from the combination, the huge expense costs that normally come with it, which is being resolved as we speak, would normally taper that number. But as you've seen from the numbers, alright, that is being resolved, as we saw in the third quarter of 2020 and going into the future. We have the largest customer base in the continent, and this is extremely important because it shows we believe that scale is important, very, very important, but efficiency is almost equally as important, and that we need to sweat the assets to get the very full benefits of scale. We have shown these figures that for 2019, we had 36 million customers at the time at which this was done, out of which we had, in terms of number of digital customers, we had 19 million digital customers, followed by KCB and some of our colleagues out here in Nigeria. But I think the most significant part of this story has to do with the digitally active customer base. In the case of Access, 44%. Now, when you superimpose that on the customer base, all right, it begins to show the benefits of the power of what will come out of it. So even though KCB has 52%, it has that on a much smaller customer base. Now, we grow our customer base in Access by something close to 500,000 customers, fresh customers, on a monthly basis. You know, and that growth rate, if we basically push out the efficiencies, all right, can basically start to spit out very, very large sums in terms of our overall contribution to profitability as we go on. But that is an extremely important number because it just shows the full, it should begin to show the opportunity and potentials that can come out given the size and scale of the institution. So we'll speak about our group financial highlights and look at our most recent numbers. That is not the most important thing, but again, we begin to see the opportunities that come out of it, and then we look into the future, speak to things that have to do with how we've expanded over the last year, what we're doing, what are the greater opportunities we see within the continent and outside the continent, and then we'll take questions from you. So we continue to deliver very strong results. If you look at our 2019 and compared to 2020 numbers, again, our gross earnings grew by 15% in spite of the difficult environment that 2020 showed. We ended up with gross earnings of about 5.2 billion, which was the highest that any other Nigerian bank showed. Our net interest from basically took a little dive, coming from the low yields of assets. But all of this led to a profit before tax, of about 116 billion as of the 9 months ended September 30th, 2020, compared to 100 billion in the corresponding period of the previous year. That increase you see coming from the operating expenses is as a result of the fact that, the figures for 2019 showed three quarters of the combination with Diamond. The first quarter did not have Diamond, all right? But the rest of it had, so we have three quarters of Diamond, while in 2020 we had a full combined institution, all right, which showed the full year for a much larger franchise. So that is what the growth in the period is all about. So the balance sheet as well reflects some form of growth. In 2020, we have to be very careful with growth rates given the impact of coronavirus. It's not a time to grow your asset book. So what you see there is, again, largely as a result of some form of devaluation rather than a significant growth in assets in real terms. We've also seen a growth in customer deposits, and that one was for real, because, we could see a big increase as far as our savings accounts and retail deposits is concerned, and you will see it when you look through the financial detail, and of course, our accretion to our shareholders' funds. With respect to prudential ratios, we are on track Our cost to income ratio continues to show improvements quarter on quarter. We continue to reflect strong capital adequacy ratios, strong liquidity ratios. Our loan to funding ratio dropped, not exactly what our regulators would want at a point in time, but because of the growth we have seen on the liability side, without growing the risk assets in the same proportion that figure has dropped. But again, as we get into more stable times, with clearer perspectives of risk, given the current environment, we will begin to push that number up a bit more as we get into 2021 and 2022. So we focused on generating sustainable revenue across all lines. All aspects of our business continue to show significant improvements. But, you know, for us, the one that is most important and which we feel extremely happy to share has to do with the expansive retail banking growth and the increased velocity of transactions. A lot of things we've done are absolutely digital. We are tracking customer activities, creating products that basically resolve lifestyle issues of customers, and which became extremely important and evident during the lockdown period that we had. Our normal forte is in the wholesale business. We continue to optimize the value chain as far as that is concerned. But again, having said all of that, pure retail remains extremely important. It introduces diversity from an income standpoint into the books of the institution. It introduces diversity, you know, on the lending side, on the non-lending commission and fees and all of that. Last year, we were generating unique 45,000 unique loans per day to customers, 45,000 to unique customers, which meant that we're basically providing about 450,000 loans to unique customers on a monthly basis, slowed down again by Corona, all right? But it just shows the extent to which we are pushing retail. It does come with larger margins, larger commissions, but most importantly, increased stickiness, all right, of customers to what we're doing. So we're prioritizing margin growth by making sure that we have the right balance sheet structure and bringing down our overall cost of funds. And we're emphasizing payments, which is in line with our 5-year corporate strategic plan. Payments is a big thing, as you will see as we move into our presentation. One within the country, making sure that customers basically use our various points of sale equipment, points of contact branches, use our various devices in terms of telephones, internet banking, our cards, etc., etc., etc. And of course, trying to make sure that we delight customers at every touch point. Sometimes it's a bit difficult because you have 42 million customers, and so any issue that happens in the overall market will impact you negatively. All right, but we are coming up with ways and expanding our overall infrastructure to make sure we start to lift up the overall customer experience, and that will be the main thrust as we get into 2021. All right, making sure that all 42 million customers are growing, we can delight them as much as possible. So we've seen, again, like we said, as scale is coming up and as we're basically reaping the synergies of the combination, we're beginning to see some focus on efficiency to bring down our overall costs. And you see it as we move down from quarter one all the way to quarter three. So far, we've seen consistent reductions in our cost-to-income ratio. Quarter-on-quarter, we see a drop. In the first quarter, it was 2.2. Second quarter, 7.8. This is quarter-on-quarter, all right? And, of course, the third quarter, 50%. The whole idea is that we will continue to push our cost-to-income ratio over time, all right? And we think that in line with global best practice, once we can get it on the average on an annual basis to about 50%, then you get the full power of the institution and the full impact on revenue will be felt. So on an annual basis, you will see it tick down, but of course, over the next 2 years or 3 years, you will see it at exactly where it wants to be. And the scale of the institution, that will spit out a lot of money, particularly when you know that you are providing the largest gross earnings compared to any other institution in the country. The overall figure that will come to the bottom line will be so much better. We digitized about 30% of our customer journeys, important, digitized 400 of our processes, consolidated vendor contracts. So all we've done is to make sure that we continue to improve on efficiencies and ensure that, again, bringing costs tighter, all right, to ensure that our overall profitability starts to basically inch up the way we want it to get to. So retail expansion is important, like as I've said. Again, there's a very, very strong focus on consumer lending. We've realized that the more we do it, the more specialized it is, contrary to what a lot of people think. Payments and remittances are critical, all right? And all aspects of payments and creating alternative payment methods and methodologies and making sure you have full control of your infrastructure. So all of these things are critical, all right, and enable us to basically serve our customers and ensure that the cost of onboarding customers is cheap and serving these customers over time, and therefore, at the end of the day, we will run a much cheaper operation. So today we have about 42 million customers and growing as of the first quarter. We have that the number of customers, but the number of accounts that we have is 46 million, obviously because there is some duplication in terms of number of accounts. One customer may have multiple accounts. So we have 42 million unique customers and 46 million account holders. Again, we've acquired 2.6 million digital customers in the period. Again, we've seen about 3.2 million new subscriptions to our mobile banking platform. We've issued 6 million cards. Savings accounts are up about to about 1.2 trillion now. It is a very important thing. At the time at which the combination was done, that figure was about 700 billion. In fact, a bit less than that, about 600 and a bit. Today, that figure is about 1.2 trillion. USSD users, 9 million of them. But of course, we have about 9.5 people on our mobile app platform. So when you look at the graph on the right-hand side, which begins to share with you what this means in real number terms, I would like to look at the bottom right-hand, and the reason that is important is that in 2018, the first 9 months, all that was made by what our digital revenue was 5.6 billion. In the 9 months of 2019, same period, it was 19 billion. 9 months of 2020, that figure has doubled. This is in spite of the fact that the central bank had introduced measures to reduce the cost to customers by as much as 30%. So if you cross up, you can begin to understand what that figure means. Now, this is still at a point where we have about 17 million customers yet to be mined, all right, and optimized, all right. So we see very, very big potential as far as this is concerned from the existing customer base, even before talking about the growth which we are seeing on a monthly basis. So top spikes above it are just a subsection of what is there, apart from, of course, the net interest revenue coming from the retail business, which is growing from the lending book which we are creating. We continue to maintain strong capital levels. Return on risk-weighted assets has moved up from 2017 about 2.96 to about 3.96. So we're pushing the efficiency. Our capital adequacy ratios have gone up as well, and we've seen that we are basically optimizing our capital structure between Tier 1 and Tier 2. But I think the right-hand side begins to show you the capital accretion which we're seeing and the retention, which has moved by about 184 basis points from December 2014, which used to be about 14%. That's the common Tier 1, common equity Tier 1 ratio, to about close to 16% by September 2020. Basically, what we're just saying here is that, again, we have strong ratios and getting stronger through the increased profitability that we'll see. But it's important to state a couple of things here. As we continue to push in 2021, what you will see is that we pay attention to capital retention and strengthening the bank's capital position. You will continue to find us grow, all right, our business outside of Africa, all right, which is strong, the UK, Dubai, etc., where they have stronger currencies, and continue to retain all of those earnings with a view to ensuring that we retain capital and strengthen the overall capital base, given the fact that a lot of African countries normally see some devaluations over time. So in the main, all right, this combination of making sure that we are strong at home, have strong ROEs, will be complemented by making sure that our outside of Africa business remains strong as well. All right, that way we create an institution that is sustainable and will be following the nature of trajectory that that very successful banks have done in the very developed markets, all right, to basically create global enterprises. So where are we headed? Again, I think digital remains a very important part of what we're doing. On our existing customer base of 42, growing by about 500,000 on a monthly basis, we will be the clear-cut digital leader in the continent. I don't think there is any African bank at scale that has embraced digital in the manner in which we've done. We've digitized our customer journeys. A lot more work is being paid to advance analytics, etc. I say all of this fully mindful of the fact that when you have the nature of customer base that we have, you have to invest quite a bit in infrastructure to support them. And if you have problems with, for instance, the national switch and all of that, it impacts you the most. So you have to start creating those structures that basically ensure that your customer experience. So we're doing everything that is possible. We are digitizing our subsidiaries and creating a federated system to ensure that we are absolutely secure at the time when you have cybercrime growing at the manner in which it's growing. We will digitize our core, and of course, we are basically ensuring that our staff are a lot more efficient, and of course, digitize the entire staff cycle. Now, what is important is we need the right type of people. I'm talking about in terms of staff and training, which we're doing. We need to build the appropriate partnerships in terms of our relationship with our various technology partners, all right, and also support what we're doing. And we need to create the right governance and processes to support all of these things. Digital and IT are extremely tricky things to do. If you don't have the appropriate governance structure to support them, it's not just about having the infrastructure or understanding the mechanism of payment and what it does with respect to e-commerce, but also having the governance to make sure that the overall institution is protected as you continue to invest in all of those things. This is where we begin to see some of the impact of what we've done. We've seen, if you look at the 9 months ended September 2017, and you ask the number of digital transactions in Access, it was 110 million transactions they were doing on an annual basis. And that is a combination of ATM transactions, mobile and internet banking, and USSD. By September 2020, what we've seen is about 800 million different transactions. So it's grown by 7.5 times. Now, the figure gets a lot more interesting when you look at the volume of the transactions. So you were doing 2 trillion naira of such transactions in 2017. You are doing 20.2 trillion naira of those kind of transactions in 9 months ended 2020. It just shows the power of what we're doing. And we are not even 50% of the way yet, all right, in terms of what we need to do with our customers to increase the level of customer stickiness. As we improve on our customer experience, provide and ensure that the alternative channels are working as efficiently as they should, all right, this figure could double or treble, if you get the point I'm trying to make, apart from the fact that we are basically going to be making sure that we grow our customer base on a month-on-month basis. We'll speak about the international expansion, one that has been spoken about quite a number of people, and share with you where we're headed. Now, in doing that, I continue to mention that Nigeria is our home base, and of course, Africa is the continent in which we operate, and there is significant similarity across the continent, even though there are peculiarities in specific markets that we can take advantage of, including of the Africa Free Trade Agreement. And so if we are strong at home, as strong in the continent, all right, we will have numbers, ROE numbers that outstrip the inflation or devaluation that we see, rather, the devaluation that we see. And if we continue to grow outside of Africa, we will have a balanced institution that is basically ensuring that it is strong internationally, it is maintaining capital levels that is required and growing over time, all right, whilst remaining one of the most profitable type of businesses within and outside the continent. Now, so in terms of Africa, we shared the initial slides, but we still have about 370 million unbanked adults across the continent. We have about $5.6 trillion in terms of projected consumer spend by 2025. These are World Bank numbers. In terms of electronic payments revenue, there's about $8.2 billion on the table. In terms of remittances and cross-border payments, about $9.2 billion. We have sub-Saharan trade, about $830 billion. Now, these are very significant sums because you don't have proper African banks that are interconnected and making sure that you have the right payment mechanisms happening. You have about 400 customers that have over $1 billion in revenue, each of them. We have about 122 million active users of mobile financial services, and therefore, you know, potential retail names. And of course, you know, we have about 89 cities, all right, of over a million inhabitants by 2025. All this is just to show the potential and opportunity for growth in the continent. Now, when you imagine that some of the large Western banks are not present here, it means that there is an opportunity for an African bank that is well-run, that understands compliance, and has capacity to support trade, correspondent banking and all of that, all right, and the right technology infrastructure to support payment and remittances without taking incremental risk. And we think we are best positioned to basically do most of all of that. So, for us, our expansion strategy has been deliberate and disciplined, and of course, supported by key enablers. What are we doing? The focus is on becoming an aggregator in Africa. Building a global payments gateway and providing trade finance support and corresponding banking across the continent and to institutions that are deserving of it. We are focusing on the key markets, as we've always said, to support regional trade. And there are a couple of them, and you'll see them on the slide, key regional places where you have huge trades, etc., and setting up the payment gateway required to support all of that. And of course, providing the foreign currency that is required for international remittances, leveraging on our Access Africa products to basically ensure that connections to wallet and payment platforms is happening seamlessly. Now, how will things be done? We need to have the appropriate operational hubs to ensure that each particular hub is well managed, whether it is within West Africa, whether it is within East Africa, or Southern Africa, or Francophone, all right, and ensuring that you have the right operational framework to support all of that, right compliance framework to support all of that as well. And of course, making sure that you have the centralized IT infrastructure, one within the operational hubs, and second at the center to ensure that the whole group is being managed efficiently from an IT standpoint, and we get the robust benefits of purchasing largely at scale. Now, support functions required for the subsidiaries will have to be set properly, and making sure that we benefit from the different centers of excellence. There will be parts of the world, in Southern Africa, for instance, where you may see strong IT capabilities, where you basically take all of that learning and bring to West Africa, etc., etc. And just make sure that we are benefiting from what we see in the different centers of excellence. But in doing all of this, the approach will always be that in the countries in which we choose to go to, we have the right skill. We will not just be a dot in the country in which we are present. We will make sure that we basically have an impactful presence in each of the major countries in which we are present in, all right, to basically reap the economies of scale and leverage digital to the end. In doing it, we are also mindful of the countries in which we are going to, all right, to diversify our earnings and risk in those specific countries and the risk rating of the specific countries to make sure that at the end of the day, all of these things are done in a manner, all right, that will be of benefit to the parent. And of course, as we do it, we are working with our friends and partners, and largely the DFIs who are investing and co-investing with us across the entire continent as we do it. The whole idea is that it is going to be beneficial to the center and to the parents in terms of the overall contribution and risk management framework that we are putting in place, and of course compliance, which is extremely critical as we move on. So this slide has not shifted. Okay. Now, so this is Africa. You've all heard about Africa Free Trade Agreement, which is started, and I know there's a big announcement coming up in February. I think that where we are positioned, we are going to take full advantage of all of this. We're going to use our digital framework to benefit. We've created products that allow settlement across the continent. We're using our subsidiary in the UK to provide correspondent banking services across the continent and all of that. We must be in a position to benefit and support financial flows across the continent using our platform. And if you look at the benefits, I mean, intra-African trade is supposed to grow by 53%. You have strong players across the continent, whether it's the likes of Dangote, who are doing exceedingly well in cement, transporting across the entire and shipping goods across the entire continent, with what they're doing in the refinery, which is coming up. So all of these things will potentially significant trade across the continent. And that institution that is present in the critical hubs, all right, and has a strong technology platform, will be able to use that platform to ensure settlements across in whatever they're doing at minimum price. Again, the GDP of the overall continent is supposed to grow by about 2.5 trillion. over 55 countries over this period of time. We expect to see increased financial flows. We hear there will be a measure of tariff on the intra-African trade, whether that happens immediately or it is delayed, etc. The overall point being made here is that there is an impetus to support African trade, intra-African trade. It may not happen at 100%, a 20, 25, 30% boost can change the fortunes of the continent. And that bank that is positioned to take advantage of it will make incremental income, sometimes without taking incremental risk. But being present in the countries in which you can connect the dots remains important to optimize everything. Now, if you were present in different countries in the past and you were not present at the critical anchor points, you may not get the full benefit. But now, our own objective, and having done a lot of work superimposing it on what we've seen coming, all right, even in this year, we think that we now have the presence, all right, given some of the things that have happened over the last 12 months, to be able to take full advantage of Africa. So, again, coming to Nigeria, I continue to emphasize Nigeria and Africa, not because that's all we're doing, because we're doing things outside of the continent. We think that there's still so much to be done, and we need to continue to entrench ourselves in the local market more and more and more. We have 72 million unbanked people in Nigeria. I think that so much needs to be done, and Access Bank is best positioned to do it. There are huge payments and remittance flows, and we've seen there's 47% growth between 2015 and 2018 in the context of Nigeria. I think we as Access Bank, we continue to see so much that can be done, and we've done it, and we've demonstrated capacity to capture some of this. Again, far from where we ought to be, because there's still so much work to be done. If you take our digital lending book, I mean, we've seen that whole thing grow on a strong customer base, all right, from where it was about 25% in 2019, 80 to 100 billion there. But the fact that we're generating 45,000 unique loans on a daily basis, all right, which is 480, and I can't remember, I mean, but you know, leads to significant over a million loans that are being created on a monthly basis. It's something that shows that we have created that engine for rapid growth. If you see our digital income on that upward swing, it is something that will have to be maintained at the absolute minimum. I'm talking of the trajectory to continue to increase the volumes. Now, I don't want to speak much about the LC volume because I think people will know us as wholesale bankers. We think that there's so much more that needs to be done over the period for us to get to where we're going to. We've seen a 6 times growth in our commission and fees. Now, our bank assurance partnership, which is a big area for big growth, all right, in 2021, moving into the future, is one that we expect to capture so much coming from. There is micro insurance, and we're partnering with Coronation Insurance, all right, as far as bank assurance is concerned, and we think it's a brand new area that we can pursue things and optimize. And particularly given the little capital base that is required in terms of ROE, those numbers are going to grow to very significant sums as we move into 2021. Next slide. So yes, having spoken about Africa, spoken about Nigeria and the opportunity around Africa Free Trade Agreement, that is not just enough. We are trying to create a global enterprise, one that is sustainable and one that we're going to be extremely proud of as Nigerians and as Africans. Now, we do realize that there are some limitations in the continent, and that one of those limitations is the fact that until we get our local indices right, you will continue to see some form of devaluation over time. And so if you are not careful, from a capital standpoint, you will see depletion over time. So what we are also doing is that we are using our Access UK as our anchor for growth, and we are basically ensuring that we continue to pursue our growth outside of the continent. Access UK is the only African bank that is on the clearing platform in the UK, which is a very significant thing. So we don't need a correspondent bank ourselves. I'm talking about Access Bank UK. There's so much that the institution is doing. We do have a presence in Dubai. You will see a couple of things coming up over the next couple of months or years, all right, which will basically show that this is leading to the creation of a proper global franchise, one that is strong at home and building up in very significant currencies or in countries of stable currencies, and using it to ensure that there's a perfect hedge and there is strong capital retention. So we're diversifying our earnings away from volatile operating markets in Africa as well, and we're orchestrating our operations as a global payment gateway and ensuring that using Access UK providing correspondent banking services, strong digital platform that the overall profitability of our franchise is one that is not just strong within the continent, but we are creating a sustainable franchise, one that may be similar when this history is written in several years to Santander or other institutions that have grown locally and decided to grow outside of their continent to make sure there's proper diversity. So we obviously need to reorganize to capture all of these opportunities. So we will be transitioning to a whole structure, and I think this has come within public domain. And through this organization, we will create new product revenues without taking incremental risk, and we'll ensure that there's diversification of earnings, and of course, the support of our outside of Africa expansion will ensure that the institution remains very healthy. So the Access Bank Holdco will consist, one, of the Access Bank Group itself, which is the banking group. I've mentioned payments, and this as well sits properly on our 5-year corporate strategic plan. We will have a very strong payment business, and I'm talking of not just providing the provision of infrastructure, I'm talking of that which has to do with the payments themselves. We're going to strengthen our consumer lending and agency banking business. I've had people say that this may sit well normally within a bank. As we've grown it into much more finer details at the SME end, etc., we're beginning to see that this requires some level of specialization. And if you get it right, the yield, the return on equity coming from it can be very significant. So we will create that business. There is the insurance brokerage business that comes out and the normal fallout of our bank insurance business, which will also enable us to optimize income as much as is reasonably possible. And as far as that business grows, given our large retail base, and what we'll be doing with our partners as far as coordination, as far as bank assurance is concerned. Again, this is the banking group one you're familiar with, broken down into Nigeria, which basically is the parent of the bank. We have Anglophone, we have Francophone, and of course the international, which is anchored by Access UK. This graph or this table will continue to change gradually as we move over time. Again, done very deliberately, taking capital into consideration, taking return on equity into consideration, and the risk ratings of the specific countries. We want to create an institution that will have a risk rating over time that will be better than most of the countries that we've invested in. And no one knows, perhaps it may appear for some reason, we don't know, but the idea is to have a very strongly rated institution. So the payment subsidiary is one, is going to consist of a very strong suite of banking assets. We will cover, it is one that is not just going to cover Nigeria. We have the partnerships, whether it's with Visa, with MasterCard, and several of the others, with the GSM companies, etc. And it's not one that will be restricted to Nigeria, but basically one that cuts across the entire continent. We will be an apex issuer, not just in Nigeria, but in other African countries. There's huge potentials for growth. We've shared this slide before. If you take our digital revenue that is growing, that figure will grow in geometric progression as we move into Holdco. The card transaction volumes and the efficiencies coming from clear of what needs to be done and the efficiencies of supporting the entire franchise, we will see both the number of cards and the card volumes and the income coming from it growing very significantly. Today we've done quite well as far as Nigeria is concerned, but I think there's still so much room for growth. Basically, one out of three transactions, generally, from a value standpoint, settle on our platform. And we think that there is so much more room for growth as we've chosen to basically diversify our overall retail base and make it stronger and make sure that perhaps over the next couple of years, by 2023, maybe one out of every two Nigerians will be banking actively in Access Bank. We share the electronic space with you, African electronic payment space with you, and I think I already spoke to that. But what this slide also shows you are the potentials that come from it. They also come from the GDP growth we see. COVID, yes, as bad as it is, has brought new payment habits to people. And of course, what we're seeing is the growing shift from cash to non-cash payment methodologies. And we think that the growth is going to outpace historical performance. Now, that institution that is postured and present in the nature halls where you have the huge population and you have the major settling arrangements or banks of presence, all right, will take advantage of all of this. And we think that more than any other bank, not just in Nigeria, across the continent, that understands how to replace this market, Access Bank will be able to take advantage of all of these things. So African electronic payments market is expected to do exceedingly well, and by 2025 we would have seen very, very significant growth that would come from it. The consumer banking business, lending business, like I mentioned, is one that is very specialized. Whether it's in terms of providing payday loans in huge, huge numbers, perhaps one day we'll be giving up 1 million unique loans a month, maybe it will be 2 million unique loans. It does come with benefits in terms of the spreads. It comes with benefits in terms of fees and all of that. All those things will help to push our overall digital revenue in terms of how the amount of income we make locally. But it's not just about making money locally. We are replicating this process across the continent. We're doing it in Ghana. We're doing it in Rwanda. We've moved it again to Zambia. So we are beginning to become more and more experts at it. All right. And the creation of a separate lending business that basically makes sure that all of this is coordinated properly, all right, and ensuring that all the franchises, and of course the mother franchise, all right, is optimizing income is one that we're going to pursue actively. And the final has to do with insurance. Again, we talked about the bank insurance model, which we are pursuing with Coronation, which has started. There is a big fallout, which is the insurance brokerage, which would have had to go elsewhere. It's one which we are retaining within the book, within our bank. This figure may not appear to be as significant as people think it is today, even though it has a high ROE. But guess what? Over the next 5 years, as people embrace insurance more and more, down to the retail level as we've seen it in Southern Africa, this figure can become anything. We've seen it. We saw how, if you take the PFAs, for instance, when it first started, it didn't appear to be that profitable. Over time, the hockey stick effect came in. We think the same thing may happen here, and that will bring significant benefit to us. So finally, just before we round up, these are areas and things that are dear to our hearts, things that have to do with ESG, things that have to do with sustainability. We will continue to prioritize our sustainability ethos, and of course make sure that we continue to win all the accolades, not because we want to win accolades, but because we think that it is a responsible way to doing business. As a financial institution that is aspiring to become global, this thing become more and more important, and you will see us play a lot more in this space as we've done in the past. I think more than any other African bank, even if I have to say to myself, we've embraced sustainability at a very, very, very significant levels. Again, this slide just speaks to the fact that, one, it has been embedded as part of our lives. Whether it's in terms of the diversity on our board, or the diversity in terms of our workforce, or things which we've done with respect to green finance. We're the only climate lending bank in the continent. It may not appear to be very significant right now, but we do understand how it is done, and we're pushing it more and more. The Central Bank of Nigeria, APEX regulator, has recognized this. Some of the leading institutions like Council Finance has recognized it, and we think that sustainability will play a much bigger role in the lives of every institution, particularly coming out of COVID and all of that as we move on. Then the full benefits of what we're doing will reflect. Now, financial inclusion in Africa is critical, given the levels of earnings that people have. We have created the agents to ensure that there's greater financial deepening. It's not only profitable because we are now using technology to drive it, but it is something that will lead to the overall deepening and change and growth in the GDP of the countries in which we are pushing it. All of these things, which will increase savings rates, are things that, given our leading status in the country in which we are present and the markets we want to operate in, there are things that which are extremely important. Not just from a profitability standpoint, but also, all right, to show our regulators and the countries in which we are operating in the fact that we owe it to those markets as well. So in conclusion, like I mentioned at the very beginning, we have shown a disciplined growth over time, which has been value accretive. We continue to lead on several metrics. We are the most digitally transformed enterprise, and using it to support our skill and innovation. We will be transitioning to our whole coast, to capture continent-wide opportunities and support our international expansion, which is done deliberately, in a deliberate manner to basically ensure that capital is preserved and enhanced. And of course, You know, making sure that our overall philosophy to have an approach, whilst it may be organic and inorganic growth, depending on where we are, we have understood how these combinations work, but it's one that is going to be continuously driven by value. Capital accumulation and protection is important to us, and we will do all that we need to do to ensure that over time, we are not just growing capital in nominal terms in the continent, but because of the retentions we're doing outside of Africa, we are enhancing the overall value of the franchise. There is a deliberate strategy to diversify earnings and dilute exposure in soft currencies in which we operate. We have a very strong bench of talent. It's one that people have asked questions about with respect to our expansion. We have basically, within our HR function, a function of growing talent across the continent and making sure that we all have one culture. A bit affected by COVID, but we've tried to do it virtually. And once COVID is finished, we'll make sure that, again, those places where we've not ensured that there's enough assimilation in terms of people coming to spend time in Nigeria, that all of that is done. But in terms of the leadership team, the middle management team required to steer this institution to growth, we think that we've basically invested enough. Never ever will it be sufficient, but we have enough to push us to where we're going to, and we continue to invest in it, all right, given the aspirations that we have. So we continue to execute in line with our 5-year corporate strategic plan. All of these things sit firmly on that, which basically ends in 2023, and hopefully, all right, we will emerge as perhaps one of the strongest African banks, one of the top 10 banks in the continent by the time we get to 2023. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. The floor will now be open to questions, and my colleagues shall support me in providing answers to whatever questions you may have. Thank you.
Thank you very much. For the participants on the webcast, if you would like to ask a question, please type the questions in the webcast question box. For the participants that dialed in, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then 1 on your touch tone phone or on the keypad on your screen. If you decide to withdraw the question, please press star then 2 to remove yourself from the list.
Questions?
Again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star then 1.
There's a question coming through with respect to, capital and ROE impact, given our African expansion. I'll let Roosevelt speak to that. Roosevelt is our Deputy Managing Director. Roosevelt, maybe you should speak to that question that I've been collecting.
All right, thank you very much, Herbert. So clearly, today we are present in about 12 African countries. From the map that was shared when Herbert was presenting, you see that it's a very deliberate entry into the rest of Africa. What you would have seen on that map is that there are some other countries that are interesting from just an after trade and payment perspective. So we will look at those markets, as he has said. But all of this is being done on the very disciplined capital approach. We're not going to go into markets where we can't acquire scale, where we cannot meet the ROE thresholds that we've created as a group, looking at weighted average cost of capital. We also are not going to go into markets or do any transaction, be it organic or inorganic, where it will be capital eroding even in the first year. So every transaction we've done in 2020 has been capital accreted. And that's the structure that we will run as we continue to expand across Africa. So it's been very deliberate. And that doesn't really give us concern. It's not a return on ego, as we say, within the institution. We're very deliberate as to why we're going into those markets. They justify the ROEs even within the first 12 to 18 months of their being set up. Thank you.
The first question comes from Adesoji Solanke from Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead, Adesoji.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you now, Soji. Please go ahead.
Oh, okay. All right, great. Thanks, Herbert. Thank you for the presentation. I think, you know, one thing you guys certainly never fail in is dreaming big. So thank you for how well you've clearly articulated the strategy. I do have a few questions. Quite a few questions. So the first one is just around progress you flagged around digital. So you mentioned, I think, a 10x increase in digital transactions by value, you know, which looks incredible. So I'm just wondering, can you spend a few minutes just talking about how you were able to achieve this? And it would be good if you can talk about how you managed to sustain the wins, the digital wins, post your merger with Diamond Bank. My second question is, you somewhat mentioned something about a global payments gateway. You know, what does this mean and entail? My third question is, in your presentation, you spoke about some countries you consider major countries in which you intend to have scale. How will you achieve this scale? That's, you know, the first question around this. And the second one is, I guess, looking into 2021, which new countries do you expect to get into? And how much capital are you allocating to this expansion? Then my final question is just around costs. Can you give any sort of guidance around, you know, what sort of OPEX quarterly run rate you should expect in 2021? Those are my questions.
Thank you, Soji. Again, we apologize that we're cut off a little bit, but let me just speak to some of the questions you've raised. Now, with respect to digital transactions, one of the things that we made sure we followed up through on as soon as we basically did the combination with Diamond was things that had to do with digital analytics, you know, AA, understanding customer behavior. We introduced something referred to as the Grand Prix, all right? And all that was happening was how many transactions are being, you know, done through digital means on a daily basis. We basically ensured that branches were competing among themselves, and we had targets for customers all the way down to retail. I'm talking about targets for account officers, right down to those who have carry POSs, the DSAs in the market. And we're asking them, how many customers have you signed on using cards? How many of them are using cards? The digital concierge in the branch is making sure that, wait a minute, this guy came with a check. How do we make sure he has his card? All right, and how many transactions is he doing? But the analytics framework and the engine to check the volume of transactions being handled digitally on a branch by branch basis was fine tuned. Okay, and so we started seeing that whole pick up. Now, 2021 has started, all right, and we have started the whole process again. We have what we call the extra wins, which has been adopted. You know, a couple of other banks are trying to do the same thing, and we really don't mind about that. And the whole idea was, if you basically use digital channels after a particular threshold, you get the win. All right, and it's almost like a raffle, and it was happening. And this thing led to increased savings accounts in spite of all that was happening. All right, so those things have led to significant increase as far as digital revenue is concerned. But it's not over yet. We use it as a tool, all right, to basically reactivate several accounts. And as I said, I'm talking about reactivate. I'm talking about in terms of the activity levels of several accounts. We still have, to my mind, that, you know, we may have about 17 million accounts that need to be pushed even a bit more. So we're using gamification, we're using all of those tricks, all right, in a digital manner, all right, to ensure that the amount of activity people are carrying out on our platform is significant. I don't think that, in my mind, that we've even gone 20% of the way. I don't think so. I think you will still see so much more in 2021, 2022, and going on. And as we get more and more customers, all right, you will then see the far. When I'm talking about how far we've gone, I'm even talking about the existing customer base. Still so much more to be done. Now, the question of a gateway, in my mind, is almost a physical gateway. We will make sure that transactions between all the way from Nigeria to wherever you are in the continent happen seamlessly. By the way, that is almost happening now. Using Access Africa, you can make a transfer within specific thresholds to anywhere in the continent, and it happens real time. I'm talking about instantaneously. So if you needed to pay your son's school fees in Ghana, the same way you would do a transfer, all right, to anywhere in the world, the same way you do a transfer within Nigeria, if you do that payment, it gets there on the second. Same thing if you are transferring to Rwanda. Same thing if you are transferring to Kenya, etc. So we're going to make sure we set up the switch network across the entire continent to make sure that it's almost as if you have a physical gateway with the right compliance framework, all right, tracking everything, ensuring cyber security is clear, all right, to make sure that there are no failures once this gets started. Now, yes, we will be present in countries of scale. The map we showed identified critical countries. Scale means a couple of things. Scale means population. Scale means GDP. Scale means, you know, just the opportunities and all of that. Now, if you check how we've done all of these things, they have all been capital accretive. All right? And the manner with which it's been done has been such that even to the parents, we benefited without, in several cases, taking in additional capital. I mean, that's the amount of information I can share with you right now. But I'll tell you a couple of things. Now, scale is important for you to reap the benefits. Being a dot in a specific country sometimes does not allow you to basically achieve what you want to do. So you may see that you have an aggregator strategy in a specific country where you use your local subsidiary to buy a couple of banks and therefore increase in terms of price and scale and scope, all right? And therefore you move from being number 10 to number 3 in that country, and therefore you can institute the relevant compliance framework, you know, and all of that to physically support the country of that magnitude. But even if you do those combinations, you're doing it in a manner that is capital accretive and sometimes does not require you to take in additional capital into those countries. And by the time you look at it, with the right management team and the right governance structure, all of those things will become profitable. So that is how we're doing those countries. You will see in specific countries, as we get to in some of them, we will not follow an aggregator strategy. We will not follow an acquisition strategy. We may choose to follow an organic strategy. And I'll give you a simple example. The rule around how you grow in Francophone countries and the nature of the laws and provisioning and all of that, given the standards we use, may require that you just follow a straight organic growth process. All right, so that you don't find yourself in a risk that you don't understand because of how they basically capture themselves. So all of those things are things we are taking into consideration as far as growth is concerned. But I'd like Shay to speak to issues around OPEX, all right, and the nature of rates, run rates in CN, over the course of the year and in 2021.
Thank you, Herbert. I mean, as you recall, the accounting from AMCON, which is a large part of our, I think it's about 20% of our cost today, happens in the first two quarters. So you see significant variability between Q1, Q2, and Q3, Q4. So on an average, over the course of the year, you see between 75 to 80 billion a quarter in OPEX. That's what you see. And on a year-on-year basis, all right, we've kept it very low in terms of whatever growth is. Maybe it should be about 5-6%, which is essentially well below inflation. Given the fact that our AMCON cost has increased, so really, if you were to make that adjustment, you know, cost has actually, you know, come down year on year.
The next question comes from Ronak Gardia from EFG Hermes. Please go ahead, Ronak.
Sorry, I was saying thanks for taking the questions. My first question is just a follow-up on capital. If I look at your capital base as of the first half, you know, you had roughly about slightly more than $1 billion of capital in Nigeria. And if I take away the group capital, if I take away the Nigerian capital from the group capital, that leaves roughly about $350 million for the rest of the group. I was just wondering if that looks quite insufficient. Especially when I compare to some of the big players in some of the countries that you are in, you know, Kenya, Ghana, Cote d'Ivoire, some of the bigger banks there have much larger capital bases. So I was just wondering if your strategy of, you know, gaining scale in this market is feasible given the amount of capital that you're committing to this market. The second question is on your payments business. As you rightly mentioned, the growth potential there is quite significant. We're seeing a big migration from cashless payments to cashless payments. But within that as well, we're seeing increasing competition from non-traditional players, specifically telcos. So could you just identify or could you just share your thoughts on what you think of telcos as other fintechs as your competitors, and how that might affect your strategy? And then the final question is on your the historical numbers. So I've seen a very, very big growth in mobile and internet banking. So could you, this maybe sounds a bit naive, but maybe just share a bit more in terms of what kind of transactions do you count within that? Thank you.
Thank you, Ronak. I'll let my colleagues speak to that. I'll let Roosevelt speak to the issue around capital and sufficiency of capital needs in Africa and the partnerships which we are creating with some of our partners across the continent in a capital accretive manner. Roosevelt, you want to speak to that?
Sure.
And the
so I think just to give you a background, I recall this question coming up when we were starting out in the UK.
and it was always that this was a very mature market, significant players. What exactly is Access Bank going to do in the UK, and how do we make it work? And I recall the conversation that we had then, and that conversation continues to be relevant. It's around the strategy that you are going into those markets with, and exactly what it is you want to do. So we're not going into Kenya, South Africa, and several of those markets that you mentioned, because we want to confront the number one or number two banks head on, at least not today. So the idea is that we're clear as to our strategy around one bank name, so what we refer to as our global relationships. We've seen that work in Zambia. We've seen it gain scale in markets like Zambia. We've already started testing it in Kenya, and it is working. For the size of capital we've taken into Kenya, it is sufficient to be able to support those corporates. We're seeing it in Mozambique, strangely, even in the oil and gas sector, where we have significant IOCs, and those businesses naturally are coming to Access Bank because of the global relationships that we have. So our strategy going into those markets is very clear and unique. The same way we drove our business in Access UK, leveraging trade and correspondent banking, and is today the largest African bank that exists in that market, is the same way we are looking at each of these markets. South Africa, for example, is going to be our hub for the Commercial region. And we know the level of trade that exists between South Africa, Mozambique, Kenya, Rwanda, Botswana, and markets like that. And we see significant opportunities which today no one is looking at. It looks very obvious, but it's interesting to know that no one is looking at those opportunities today, and it's something we think we can very quickly begin to take advantage of. I guess the other thing to look at is in several of these markets, we are also building partnerships. So we're not going there on a standalone basis to access just Access Bank, looking at the rest of the markets to compete. In markets where we can build skill, sometimes we're not actually buying banks. We're actually partnering with existing banks in those markets because we see that there's significant synergies that coming together will provide. It's a model we've tested in Mozambique. It's a model we're testing in Zambia, and we see that there's significant value accretion that is coming to us even with less capital that we have put into the market. For some of those businesses in the future, there might be a need to buy out the existing equity holders, but where we are today suggests that we can play in those markets, be relevant, gain scale, without having to put too much capital at risk.
Still be in control.
And still be in control, of course, which is very important to us.
Okay. Now, in terms of the payment space and competition, I think it's a space that is opening up, and we're embracing all players, fintechs, etc., etc., telcos, etc. In the course of my presentation, we spoke about partnerships, and that is one that and that is something that we've lived on, both at Access Bank and in the combination with Diamond and as Access and Diamond. All right. If you look at the nature of relationships we've had with the telcos in all the things we've done, it's by making sure that we've basically partnered with all of them. And I don't think it's going to change. But I think we're going to reinvent ourselves as we move on more, particularly given the whole co structure, to ensure that we basically play in that space in a very slightly different way that we've played as a traditional bank. So we will be able to compete with some of the players in that market, all right? But in a manner in which that nobody can be disadvantaged us as an institution. If there's any institution always been structured, all right, in terms of its digital aspirations and things we're doing, all right, to ensure that if there is a disadvantaged thing going to happen, we will be at the center of making sure it happens. So we are not worried about it. We think that it's a brand new market that all of us can benefit from, and it's only banks that choose to remain traditional that will suffer it. So we are really at the center of all of that. Historically, I think you spoke to the impact of mobile and internet banking. It continues to grow, and I thought I answered it in the first phase of what I spoke to. I think that that particular contribution to income as part of our overall digital profitability will grow, alright? You will see it in 2020 numbers, you will see it in 2021 numbers as we move on, alright? And I think there's just so much potential. When you look at those who are still using non-digital means to basically support what we're doing, all right, it is very insignificant. It is very significant compared to those who are using digital means. And I think there's still so much room for growth. Rosa, you wanted to say something?
Just going to add to that, that I mean, you would have seen the numbers from 2017 to date. You'd have seen a compounded annual growth rate of about 42.2%, and this is across profitability on our digital platforms. It does in itself speaks to the fact that there's significant opportunities we've taken advantage of. And as another said, we're only scratching the surface. We think there's so much depth that exists in the market, not just because we'll be growing our customer base, but we'll be entrenching a stronger ecosystem and value chain, leveraging the key corporates that we have strong relationships with. So I think there's still so much room for growth. For 2.2% looks aggressive over 2 to 3 years, but I think there's so much more that we can do.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Sorry, is there another follow-up? Is that okay?
Ronak would like to know if he can pose a follow-up question.
Please.
Yes. Sorry, just a couple of follow-ups on that. My question on my last question on mobile banking. I just wanted to know what products do you include within that? Is it just NIPS or NIPS and a couple of other products within that? Because the growth seems extremely phenomenal, and I just wanted to get a better understanding of that product. So that's just the first follow-up. And then the second one, going back to capital and scale. Ruzold, I get your point. You know, you're being innovative. But if I look at your own experience in Nigeria, you know, for a very long time, you know, you didn't have the scale and your ROE therefore suffered as a result of that. And that meaningfully changed when the bank acquired Intercontinental 8-9 years ago. So again, going back to that question, given that, you know, you're committing about $300 million to these various countries, can you really get meaningful scale to earn decent ROEs out of this subsidiaries? Sorry, I'm just being a bit more.
Okay, let me put it differently. Right now. You will see from the partnerships that we're going to be creating over this year, and that figure may not be $350 million, maybe $700 million with limited injection from our own part. You will see us partnering with DFIs who are coming to support. You will see different types of things, not just tier one capital, I'm talking about supported by tier two capital, if you get the point I'm trying to make, coming across to support all of these things. So, $350 million, as you look at it today, is not significant. It is going to be complemented by monies which we are going to raise from our different partners. In places where we see us doing combinations, we are not paying out people. Those are measures, and are measures that are value and capital accretive to us. Now, and that's not just it. We will basically get long-term capital to support a lot of those places. Even in Ghana, which we are present in, we do have very strong capital ratios, which we are even yet to deploy. And compared to the Ghanaian banks in a market which is considered significant in the context of West Africa, all right, we do have enough capital. There will be a very fine balance that needs to be achieved. Remember that in most of these countries, you have currencies that devalue. You have to come up with a very intelligent construct of tier one capital and a dollar-based tier two capital, all right, that is not going to be obviously, all right, lent in local currency, all right, and supported with one bank names that ensures that from a capital standpoint, you remain very, very strong. So you will see tier two capital preps coming up, all right, which will ensure that we basically have the right capital to support all that is happening. I'll give you an example. There were several countries that called for significant capital, and all that capital had to be converted to local currency. For banks that did that, that was a total destruction of value, if you get the point I'm trying to make. So we are doing combinations that ensure that we meet the tier one threshold, but are supported by preps, all right, in tier two that may be in foreign currency to ensure that capital is preserved. So it's something that we've studied, and there's a clear model for us, and we basically know how we're rolling out across the continent. We will not do anything that does not allow us sufficient capital to operate properly and efficiently, given the target market that we seek in the specific countries in which we want to have an operation. Now, with respect to mobile and internet banking, Ronak, these figures you've seen are still NIP-type numbers. They are still numbers that are based on just pay and receive today, as it is. We have not included some of the other implications of things which we are doing through digital wins and showing up for the savings volume, because that one shows more from a net revenue from funds standpoint. If one out of every three transactions are beginning to settle, and then you are basically going to shift this a bit more and deepen that market, I think that number can still maintain the same nature kicker that you see, if you get the point I'm trying to make. So there's still so much to be done. And it's even more painful for some of us Each time you have a problem with the national switch, we feel it more than others. So we have to create a customer that protects us, all right? And that way, we have a much stronger customer experience and much more profitability coming from our digital offerings. Thank you. Next question.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question comes from Tunde Ogunleye from SBG Securities. Please go ahead, Tunde.
Good afternoon, and thank you for the call. So I just wanted to clarify on the new holding company structure. You mentioned that you're going to be creating a separate lending segment. So I wanted to find out if the lending segment is going to be with the core banking, that is Access Bank Group, or it's going to be with the payment business. Just more clarity on the lending segment. And the second question is on your expansion into the South African market. So you, in your press release, you stated that you made an initial cash contribution of 49% and with the aim to increase it to a majority stake in the second tranche. So when is the second tranche expected to be completed? And then the second tranche, is it going to be by cash contribution too as well? And then the final question is on your applications in the digital banking space. So you've launched QuickBooks, PayD loans, and then Access Cluster in the digital banking space. So I wanted to know if you'll be having more interventions coming into 2021. Yeah, that's it for my question. Thank you.
All right, so now let Rizwan speak to this, to all of these questions. Rizwan, do you want to speak to it?
Yeah, sure. So the payment business is not going to sit within the bank at maturity. So that's a separate aspect of our business. And I think when I was just speaking, you did mention that one of the things we found out that is that there's a bit of specialization that exists in each of those businesses. So you could do it ordinarily within the bank, but we think the final benefits that we should get from setting up a pure payment business will be lost if we don't do it in the manner in which we are thinking. So it will be outside of the traditional bank, and it will focus specifically on payments. So that's what that is. On South Africa, it will be a one transaction flow. We're not going to break it into two, the 49 and then subsequent. We're advised by the regulator that it's much quicker and faster to do it in the manner in which we initially had proposed. So this will be done as one transaction. I think a question you had asked around capital and what happens. So I think in South Africa, yes, there will be a capital demand. It's not significant, nowhere near what you would imagine. And we're going into South Africa again as partnership with two other institutions. We will be the dominant bank in that partnership, controlling what from a tier one equity will be north of 80%. Our partners are coming in with tier two capital and with some preference shares as this deemed fit. And the preference shares will be held in USD. I think we've emphasized throughout this call the idea of retaining capital in very strong currencies and ensuring that we don't go into a market and two or three years later, just because of devaluation, we see that we're shrinking in size and scale. So South Africa will as well be a partnership. Yes, we'll front-end some tier one capital, not significant. And then our partners who are DFIs, as Herbert had mentioned earlier, and some strategic investors in FI across Africa as well, will be working with us in the South African market. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. We have no further questions on the audio line. Can I hand back to you for questions from the webcast? While we are waiting for questions from the webcast, can we take another question from the phone line?
Yes, please.
Thank you. The next question is a follow-up question from Timothy Wumble from APSA. Please go ahead, Timothy.
Hi, thank you. First of all, I would say congratulations on this strategy. It is quite ambitious, I would say. We've seen some of your peers venture to East Africa, you know, to Southern Africa as well. And I know when we track their performances, and this is referring to your Nigerian peers, we've seen them not, really grow in those years which they've been functional in those markets. So, but just to start off, I would just want to find out whether are you willing to divulge, you know, what multiples you're paying for, let's say, Bank ABC Mozambique and what you paid for Government Zambia? and maybe the ROEs of those banks. I think that will be helpful. And maybe also what you paid for Transnational Bank and the ROEs. Then maybe after that, could you just give us a sense of the positions in those markets? Are they, I mean, tier one, tier two, tier three banks? You know, just to get a sense of, from a scale point of view, where exactly they sit. So I know that, for instance, that Access Bank Kenya still remains one of the, I mean, it is a small tier three bank. And so I just want to get a sense of, you know, Zambia following the acquisition of Kavumutu, where that sits, and then also the positioning of Bank ABC as well. My other question will be on strategy in, let's say, because you're talking about your intention to scale up. And so let's say in Kenya, is it going to be a retail-driven strategy? Had you mentioned in your presentation that, you know, you're looking to bank corporates. You know what? So I'd assume this is largely intra-Africa corporates. Corporates doing a lot of inter-Africa trade. Maybe just explain a bit on that strategy, on, let's say, how you intend to grow your Kenyan business. And then just lastly, on your payments business, is there any possibility that you're interested in the payment service banks that were, I believe, which I think banks in Nigeria are potentially looking at being a part of. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Several questions asked in one, but I'll try and see if I can answer the different questions. And I think one of the things you were asking about had to do with the relative positioning in the different markets in which we've basically done acquisitions. You know, in the course of my presentation, I mentioned to you that at the key hubs, we will not just be a dot. And so we will continue to take whatever actions required, all right, to scale up to the point that is required for us to serve the market that we want to basically serve. So in Zambia, we've done the first step, which is the acquisition of Kavumutu. We think that has taken us and shifted us to a tier two type institution coming from one of the smaller institutions. We continue to look for ways in which we can improve and enhance our position in Zambia. The overall capital of Zambia, Access Bank Zambia, has changed. And I think if you were to look at the top five banks or top seven banks from a capital standpoint already, we are getting there. We'll do several other things required in Zambia to basically take us to the tier one number. Now, we will be a top five bank definitely in Zambia over the next year. Definitely. You can take that home to sleep. Now, with that level, if you begin to understand that the level of imports or trade between South Africa and Zambia is about $5 billion, I think, if I recall. And of course, to Mozambique, almost the same type of figure, maybe a bit less to Zambia. There is significant connectivity or in terms of business between those countries. In Mozambique, we've basically taken ourselves again up in that ladder through the combination with Bank ABC, all right? And that combination hopefully should be consummated imminently because most of the things have already been done. If that happens again, we're moving from one where we're a tier three player to a strong tier two contender. You get the point I'm trying to make. So definitely we will be one of the top 10 banks in Mozambique, all right? And based on the capital that we've had from a capital accretive arrangement, it will propel us to become one of the top five. So you can see that in each of these. And by the way, the ROE computation is such that in all of these franchises, you will see a 20% north ROE over the next 3 years. None of them is going to be loss making from day one. The rigor that we are putting in the combination and the structure and all of that is such that we are making sure that a lot of the problems are dealt with at the very beginning. It is true that you will never finish seeing everything. Some of the skeletons may come out after, all right? But I think you should give us a little bit of credit for one institution that has done more combinations than any other institution in the continent to date. Now, speaking about the payment business, it is important that we establish ourselves firmly, particularly given our growing retail expansion within the context of Nigeria and the continent. Are we going to get a PSB license? Is anybody's guess? We will continue to look for the best ways to basically optimize value within the regulatory constraints that we face. All right. But let's just put it this way: even from just setting up on what we have, all right, that payment business will be extremely profitable from day one. Now, on the webcast, I see a very interesting question coming out, and that came from Greg Barker of Sustainable Capital, and who spoke to the fact that with respect to the dividend payout ratio, is it 28% for Access compared to 50% for our comparators, i.e., I think one or two banks he's talking about. And do we think we're going to pay more dividend out? Greg, my simple answer is this. We have a residual dividend policy. Our dividend policy is to achieve two things. One, make sure that we can support our expansion, growth and infrastructure requirements properly. And secondly, all right, make sure that our capital adequacy is not of 20%, all right? And then, of course, make sure that our dividend yield does not fall below the threshold of 5%. But I'm going to tell you something more interesting. The growth we are creating is about creating a franchise that will stand beyond us and will ensure that perhaps 3 to 5 years from now, will be seen as a strong global player whilst maintaining that balance with what needs to be paid to those shareholders who require some cash. So a lot of the money will continue to be retained to support our growth trajectory. In some countries like the UK, we will not pay any dividends because we are using it as our own capital edge, if you get the point I'm trying to make. All right? And the whole idea is to make sure that we create an institution, whether it's like Santander or some of the other global players that have emerged like this over time, while making sure that you have adequate capital to support yourself. With increased profitability, obviously, we may see the need to pay out a bit more dividends, and I think that will happen, given what we're seeing with respect to the increased profitability coming from retail and all the things we're doing. But it's not to say that there will be a firm dividend ratio. The dividend, it's a firm dividend payout ratio. The idea is to make sure that out of what is considered a strong capital, the retained earnings are required to support our growth is done, and that dividend payment in terms of cash is residual. But hopefully, we'll be sufficiently profitable to ensure that that amount also continues to grow and become significant even in the hands of the retail shareholders. There's another one that speaks to the transition to HoldCo. We have started the process, obviously. There are legal things that need to be accomplished. We expect to go through it in the course of the year. I'm being careful with giving you any specific dates because, obviously, there is some time frame and legal things that need to happen. But I think that if we take this year, it should happen sometime in the later part of this year. I have not seen how would Cavmont affect the bank's bottom line. I think Cavmont basically is value accretive to Access Bank Zambia, and the ROE of the combined entity will be north of 20%, so it will be profitable. But compared to the overall size, and I'm talking about in terms of 2020, in terms of 2020, which has just passed, it will not be anything because Cavmont itself was a tiny little component if you look at it in the context of the overall size of Access. But the context of Zambia is maybe something reasonable, but nothing in the context of the overall size. What are the expectations of how this expansion will drive the share price on the local boss? I don't know. All we're interested in doing is creating value. We will push value. We will grow the profitability. We will grow the ROE. That's what's important to me. We will continue to make sure in terms of scale and scope and global relevance that the institution continues to get its own, and of course, the market will find its own as we move on. There is a question that speaks to our growth in agency banking. What are the risks involved, and how has the bank considered mitigating those risks, and how is the bank going to ensure the culture rubs off on its agents? Very tricky question. Given the extension, very, very tricky question. That's why it's also going to be moved to HoldCo, because the number of agents is an issue. There are operational risks, but let me put it this way. If you look at the overall contribution to our savings account business, which doubled actually in 2020, alright, those operational risks amount to nothing compared to what has happened. But like you said, We need to think about culture issues and all of those agents, and so we need to create a separate vehicle, all right, given how they're managed and what that means in terms from an earnings standpoint and their expectations and their career path, etc., etc. So that is how we intend to deal with that. So Chukwu Zoho was one who asked that question. And that covers all the questions we've seen on the webcast, and I'll leave it to, again, the telephone line to see if there's any more questions before we draw today's presentation to a close.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, just one final reminder. If you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. If you would like to ask a question, please press star, then one. The next question is a follow-up question from Adisoji Solanke from Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead, Adisoji.
Yeah, hi, Herbert. I just wanted to ask, you know, in terms of Nigeria, right, and M&A, what's your view in terms of, you know, how things play out from a strategic viewpoint? Do you think you could potentially buy another bank? And just also, how are you assessing the responses from your peers to the competitive dynamics in the Nigeria market? Thanks.
Okay. So let me put it this way. We have acquired very significant skill through the combinations we've done, and we're digesting what we're doing, and that remains our focus for now. I think that if you go around the market, there is no institution that understands M&A like we do. People have grown organically, and which is fine, quite frankly, but understanding M&A is a different skill altogether. But we want to focus on making sure that we have one culture. Some of the teething issues that come from combinations are resolved. Some of the semi-union issues are resolved. Some of the culture issues are resolved. But it does not mean that if it would be remiss to say that if there was an opportunity that was compelling and that can add value, that we would not look at it. But the idea for us now is that with this trajectory, we've started forcing down those costs which we were criticized for. But I think one thing is clear to me in my mind, the market will understand all we are doing, and that all we've been doing is investing for the future. All you need to do is just cast your mind back 8 years, 9 years, 10 years ago. Who would have known that we are going to be where we are today? All right? So we haven't even started, because we're building a global franchise. We're investing for the future. And anything that would make us to continue to be strong at home in Nigeria specifically, and of course in the continent, all right, and creating the framework for us to expand outside, we will look at it because we understand the framework and we put in place the framework to do it. Now, with respect to how our colleagues are, the strategic responses from our colleagues, I think that, quite frankly, we from a risk standpoint, the Nigerian banking industry is so much better than it was maybe 10 years ago. But people are playing according to their strengths. If you don't understand M&A and you've grown organically and you want to attempt it, it does come with its own issues and there are branch issues, etc., etc. But then, there's only so far organic growth can also take you. So people are looking at all of those opportunities and looking at where their strengths lie and looking for how to grow. But I think at the end of the day, what you will see is that for us, it's not just a competition with Nigerian banks. We are in a global market space. The world is changing, the climate environment is changing. You may wake up one day and find out that you are talking to the wrong competitor. And what we need to do is keep our eyes on that larger ball and make sure we're getting there. You will see a number of Nigerian banks who have the same aspirations, if you like. But it's a race against time and all the innovation that we're seeing in the market, and we are determined to be ahead of everybody else.
Can I ask, you know, thank you for the question. Just one quick follow-up. Just in terms of what's been going on locally, because there's this, you know, surface of liquidity in the local market. You know, I know this is not an earnings call, but if you can just talk around how you think, you know, the low interest rate environment could affect, you know, whether it's the profitability of the industry, what sort of responses could, you know, banks potentially have to this environment? Because it's a strange one, clearly. So I'm just keen to hear your thoughts. Yeah.
It is. And you saw it as far as the interest income is concerned on our own financials. It drops because obviously the government is determined to pursue a low interest rate regime. And the thing that is basically just to expand, lead to some expansion in terms of credit to the real sector and all of that. Is there merit in it? Yes, there is merit. Are there questions around it? There are questions. But the central bank will continue to play its game to make sure that it continues to protect itself and support the growth in the real sector. Now, how will banks respond to it? Obviously, people are looking for where to lend money and what to do, etc. We have pursued a retail growth, and we think that even growing from the transaction banking that we're doing can make up for a lot of that loss which people have seen. And you are seeing it in the balance sheet, and you're seeing it in our P&L. It's not an earnings call, but those are some of the things you're seeing. Are we going to keep pushing margins on our retail loan? The answer is yes. All right. Is there room for people to take those loans? The answer is yes. If you also look at us compared to everybody else, in terms of the crash, in terms of the cost of funds, we have brought it down faster than anybody else. So people had an initial significant advantage over us at the time of the combination. But for us, we've come down very, very significantly while they have little room to achieve. So at a time when people are going to suffer and profitability will remain reasonably flat, in our own case, it will be moving up, if you get at least for our comparison banks. But it's going to create significant pressure on banks, particularly in 2021, because of the low interest rate regime. We think we are on the better side of it, given where we're coming from, and it would appear that the combination we did was just fortuitous, because, I mean, how could you have known that this was what was going to play out, if you like? And so we start to benefit from it. But it's a very competitive and intense period. So people have to look for creative ways to actually lend to the real sector.
Herbert and team, we have no further questions in the queue. Can I perhaps hand back to you for closing comments?
Okay, well, all that is left is for me to thank everyone who has been able to come onto this call. It was not an earnings call. At least it shows some interest in our institution, and we felt the need to also share with you where we're headed. We look forward to the more appropriate earnings call after the end of the after our financials are approved. And once again, thank you so much for dialing in. Have a great day.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes today's conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.